The computing and media thread, for instance, requires students to take courses in computer science, communications, writing, and liberal arts. The idea behind this thread, said First, is to teach students what they need to know to tell stories and create experiences for humans through technology. Here you'll see courses on topics ranging from computational graphics to Hamlet, from human perception to interactive fiction engines. So, for instance, if you want to be a top-notch game designer, this is where to start. The Computing and People thread prepares students by helping them to understand the theoretical and computational foundations for designing, building, and evaluating systems that treat the human being as a central component. The student who pursues computing and people might want to combine it with computing and embodiment to study human-robot interaction. There are almost as many mix-and-match permutations with these threads as there are coffee options at Starbucks. Imagine, wrote DeMillo in an essay describing his program, a Georgia Tech undergraduate computer science student in her sophomore year interested in computer security. She might combine the computing and information thread to learn how data is stored, retrieved, encoded, and transmitted with the computing and people thread to learn how people use technology and how to run experiments with human subjects. She will craft a valuable computing identity and become someone able to design, invent, and build secure computing systems enabling people to securely manage their information. The point about each of these threads, individually and in combination, said DeMillo, is that they provide a skill set and credential basis that allows graduates to create value in ways beyond what would be possible with only a narrowly focused tool set. And that skill set is certain to have value in the emerging flat world marketplace. 25 years ago, computer science was easy, added DeMillo. 25 years ago, there was a clear stack: hardware, software, and algorithms. And if you could fit in anywhere in that stack, you had a job. You just picked one of those sweet spots to specialize in, and you were off and running. You could work on hardware, you could program system software, or you could work on application algorithms. Now, fast forward 25 years. There is no clear-cut hardware, software, algorithm stack. Instead, there is business process, change management, and ERP. Now, it is all horizontal and in constant motion. So if you are an educator, what do you do? What remains unchanged is the need to be able to tell stories, to be able to build things that have intelligence in them, and to be able to create networks. All that remains constant. But now the way you do that is by aggregating pieces horizontally. The threads are aimed at putting things together that make sense. That is why you need to run a whole university this way. The whole notion of separate departments is crazy. You really need to change the whole approach. This is not about small tinkering. What the Georgia Tech model recognizes is that the world is increasingly going to be operating off the flat world platform with its tools for all kinds of horizontal collaboration. So schools had better make sure they are embedding the tools and concepts of collaboration into the education process. It has to run through the whole curriculum, said First. It can't just be a single course. Otherwise, we will never nurture a high enough percentage of the population to be competitive. The right country. So if these are the jobs and the pathways to the new middle, let's step back and ask, how well-suited is America generally in this flattening world to creating these jobs and paving these pathways? The short answer is that we have, in theory, all it takes to produce the jobs and educate the sorts of people who will thrive in a flat world. Yes, we really do. Let's go down the list. To begin with, we have a relatively flexible, deregulated, free market economy with lots of experimentation and competition between states and universities, like Georgia Tech. The general flexibility of the American economy is a huge asset at a time when constant change is required to stay competitive. So far, America has not succumbed either to economic protectionists who want to put up walls to keep jobs in, or national security protectionists who want to keep workers out. As Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina once remarked to me, the one thing we can't do is try to protect our way to prosperity. It is essential that we stay as open and flexible as possible. America's cultural willingness to tear things down and rebuild them anew gives us an enormous advantage in the age of flatness, when you are required to tear down and build up more often to achieve innovation and growth. We made the transition from agriculture to industry, and then from industry to services. Now we need to go to the next phase, which is services delivered globally. Each of these transitions was wrenching in its own way, but we were able to accomplish each faster and more efficiently than any other major economy because we were open and flexible and let the market do its work, which it did, though not without pain for plenty of people. The transition to the flat world will be particularly wrenching because it is likely to touch many more white-collar workers. Nevertheless, this is no time to freeze up. You Americans have all the things you need to get your people from the old middle to the new middle, said Nandan Nilekani of Infosys. If you get through this transition first, you will be kings of the hill. But if people lose their nerve and protectionists come along and start building walls, you will fail. It is an act of faith. You have to believe that it will happen. Underneath this umbrella of flexibility, America has a myriad of institutional strengths. It starts with America's network of research universities, which spin off a steady stream of competitive experiments, innovations, and scientific breakthroughs, from mathematics to biology to physics to chemistry.